It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. It is Friday. Happy Friday to all of you. You made it. We've got a lot that we've got to talk about today. We'll go through some headlines in segments one and two. Segments three and four, we'll be chatting with Stan Everett. He has created the Legacy Project to help people be able to communicate with each other in this very divisive time that's going on in America. And instead of talking about personalities, how about we talk about principles? And so there'll be some really good nuggets of wisdom that I think will come out of that conversation in segments three and four. As you know, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. If something is a good idea, then you don't have to use force to implement it. And sometimes force can be more hidden. It may be hidden in incentivizing people to do things. But on one side, if you're incentivizing one person, you're penalizing another. So be very careful when we hear that word as well. I'd like to say thank you to the team, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And thank you to each of you listeners. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, your body today, and strive for excellence. You have a purpose. You are treasured and valued. And, of course, go to my website, Kim Munson, that's M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and all the podcasts and of the show are there. And be sure and sign up for my weekly newsletter so we can keep you up to date on what's happening. So first thing, I was thinking, because we're having Stan Everett on, and really positive, doing things that are positive, I thought, who is a great positive person? And remember Norman Vincent Peale. And I actually have this on one of my walls. It says, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. Steve, I love that quote.
Yep, there's another keeper. You have a knack for pulling out the gold when you go looking for quotes.
You know, it actually takes more time than you would realize to try to think about, you know, what hopefully will, you know, resonate with the listeners as we talk about the show. But I love that one. Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars.
It takes time, so Steve, because, you have discernment.
I try to most days. We'll see what you think about my discernment on our joke today. Are you ready?
I peaked. This is a keeper, too.
Okay. A helicopter was flying around above Seattle when an electrical malfunction disabled all of the aircraft's electronic navigation and communications equipment. Due to the clouds and haze, the pilot could not determine the helicopter's position. The pilot saw a tall building, flew toward it, circled, and held up a handwritten sign that said, "Where am I?" in large letters. People in the tall building quickly responded to the aircraft. They drew a large sign and held it in the building window. Their sign said, "You're in a helicopter." The pilot smiled, waved, looked at his map, determined the course to steer to SeaTac Airport, and landed safely. After they were on the ground, the co-pilot asked the pilot how he had done it. He said, "Well, I knew it had to be the Microsoft building because they gave me a technically correct answer, but it was completely useless."
Yeah. I think Bill Gates might have want to weigh in on that one, but then again, he sold it all. He doesn't care.
It's true. Anyway, that's your humor for the morning, because we need to get you ready for some things that are not so humorous. Let's go through some of these bills that yesterday, because we were talking about that coerced vaccination bill, we didn't really get through these others, and there were a couple others I wanted to make sure that you were aware of. But first of all, I like this, and this was a bipartisan bill. It's House Bill 20-1039. And remember, HB stands for House Bill, meaning it's coming out of the House. SB would mean it's coming out of the Senate. So this is House Bill 20. That's the year, 1039. And it's a transparent state web portal search rules. And it would allow the public to easily search for information relating to state agency rules at no cost. It seems like a no-brainer, Steve, that you should be able to find out what the state rules and regulations are without having to pay for it. But we have to have some legislation to put that into place. It's kind of mind-boggling. It did pass out of committee unanimously, or pretty close to unanimously. It looks like 10 to 1. I'm not sure who the one was that didn't vote for that, but that seems like a good idea, Steve.
How many votes go that way? Is it
not very many?
Scripps Howard,
not very many in Colorado.
They own Channel 7, the Denver channel. Their motto is "Shine the light, and people will find their way." I think that's a good explanation or a good descriptor of this bill.
Yeah, so there is some good stuff happening down there, but this is really the next one. I wanted to make sure that you were aware of this. This lost in its first hearing. So a bill is read, and in Colorado, there has to be a hearing for each of these bills. And many times they'll go to what's called the kill committee. So when the Democrats or the Republicans, whichever one's in power, they have what's called a kill committee, and they put representatives or senators or representatives on those committees that they think are in safe districts that would not have any real challenge to being reelected. And so they can take these very, many times very bad votes, and they still think that they will get reelected. Now, note, if you're in those districts, maybe you might want to reconsider that. But this was House Bill 20, 1068. It's called a Born Alive Child Physician Relationship. And it was concerning the enforcement of the rights of a living child after abortion. The summary says the bill establishes a physician-patient relationship between a child born alive after or during an abortion and the physician who performed or attempted to perform the abortion. The bill requires the physician to exercise the same degree of professional skill, care, and diligence to preserve the life and health of the child as a reasonably diligent and conscientious physician would render to any other child born alive at the same gestational age, and requires that the child born alive be immediately transferred to a hospital. The bill creates a civil penalty of $100,000 for a violation enforceable by the Attorney General. It makes a violation a Class 3 felony and makes a conviction unprofessional conduct for licensing purposes. Guess what? This died in committee. If any of us in Colorado that would not want to make sure that a child that was born alive would, that we would do everything to take care of it, we're in a crazy time right now, Steve, because that died in committee, of course, in the Democrat controlled House, and this is very scary. I'm just so sad about this, Steve.
Well, I guess you're good at setting these things up. I want to say, just hold that thought while you go on to the next one, and then put this who side by side.
Okay, so the next one is Senate Bill 20, so it's coming out of the Senate. Senate Bill 100, Senate Bill 2100, it's repealing the death penalty here in Colorado. It says it would, repeal the death penalty by the General Assembly in all circumstances charged on or after July 1st of 2020. So let's think about this. A child that is born alive, Colorado will not create a law that would keep that child alive, an innocent, tiny little human being. But a criminal who has committed a crime that would be a death penalty crime, we will now keep them alive. I mean, it doesn't connect that you don't want to protect the innocent, but you do want to protect the criminal. When this starts to happen in society, a society starts to break down, Steve.
No debate here. I cannot believe that we will take a look at these situations where an individual has clearly, and I say again, clearly stepped outside the boundaries. And I'm thinking of several of the, air quotes here, gentlemen who are on death row, and the acts that they have been found guilty of, in terms of maybe the number of lives that they have taken. And we can just say, no, we don't think that's a deterrent. And I guess I want to say, I'm not, sure I care whether it's a deterrent or not. These guys have stepped outside the boundaries of what's considered normal citizenship, and now we're going to, you know, keep them around so they can keep, you know, trying to get, I guess, I don't know if they're eligible for parole somewhere way down the line. I don't know. But the fact that, you know, every time they stick a camera in their face, they just leer at the camera to say, you know, go ahead. I dare you.
Well, you know, there's certainly, I mean, there, I think there has to be something that happens when you have such a heinous act that you would be eligible for the death penalty. In a society, we need to, you know, I think that penance has to be paid many times. And but that's not, I don't think that's really the issue I wanted to make on this. I wanted to just set this up and say, hey, look at this. Colorado wants to protect criminals, and it actually will not protect children. And those two things just don't seem to match up. So when we're looking at all of this legislation, we need to look at it in the big picture. And on this, they actually have some bipartisan support on repealing this death penalty. Senators Jack Tate and Kevin Priola said that they would back the bill. Senator Rhonda Fields, she wants to keep the penalty. As you may remember, her son and his fiance were murdered by two men who are on death row today. So she's, you know, firsthand, she understands that a very, you know, very bad crime was committed. It's hurt their family, and so she's a protector of the death penalty. So very interesting, but that's really not the issue. We're looking at the bigger picture. They will not protect children, but they're protecting criminals. That is what is happening in our state right now, and we need to push back on that. And the way that we're going to have to do that is at the ballot box, because when we talked to Pam Long yesterday, she said 350 families showed up to testify against this coerced vaccination bill, and the legislators did not listen. But she said that there were two Republicans and the senators on that committee, Senators Paul Lundeen and Senators Jim Smallwood, who continue to ask good questions. This is a very bad bill. I think it's 1063. And the point I want to make is that they did not listen to them. One other thing before we go to break is you're seeing this across the across the country. Municipalities now think that they need to get into the child care business. And in Breckenridge, this is from the Summit Daily, the town council discussed potential solutions for the lack of sustained funding for the child care tuition assistance program, as the current funding is projected to dry up by 2024. The staff presented 8 ideas for sources of funding, which range from marijuana excise taxes to creating a child care surcharge on business licenses based on the number of employees. Then the council focused on an idea brought up by council member Dick Carlton, who proposed adding a 1% excise tax on short-term rental properties based on income. Staff explained that the proposed tax would be needed to be on the ballot and voted on by Breckenridge residents. Revenue predictions by town manager Rick Holman indicated more than $1 million could be generated from more than 3,600 short-term rental properties in town. Carlton suggested the revenue could be used for child care, housing, and health care, but some council members disagreed with the idea of lumping the three issues into a potential ballot measure. I'm a little hesitant, the mayor said. I think going for child care is one thing, but housing and health care, I don't want all of a sudden to have 5 different things that we're trying to resolve on the back of one. As far as the timing, the soonest the voters could vote on that would be in 2022. But let's think about that, Steve. People don't really like to pay taxes, but they like to have somebody else pay taxes. And so you can see that they are trying to say, hey, we can offer this service by taxing this one little group over here. And ultimately, you get down to really bad policy. But this is, look at this. Is government, are these municipalities really supposed to be in the child care business? How about we lower regulations? How about we lower taxes? How about we make it less expensive for families to be able to live, so that many of them, I think many families, may want to have a parent stay home. But because of policy, we're making housing, child care, health care, all these things that are so expensive, And then, of course, government comes in and they say, well, we need to help. And, of course, the way to do that is to raise taxes on somebody. So let's go to break. Before we do that, though, you know, March Madness is right around the corner. The place to watch the games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesdays are Dine-In Wing Day, all the wings you could eat for $15.99. You can try their new roasted wings. My favorite are the boneless wings. And if you don't want to cook, drop by Hooters Restaurants, pick up dinner to take home, or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. I do that. Just go to my website, and all my sponsors are there, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can get all the information right there on my website. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on with some of these headlines, and then Stan Everett in segments 3 and 4. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. We'll highlight what's coming up and all kinds of great information. Steve, you'd mentioned that you'd heard this soundbite by Michael Bloomberg. And why don't you play that? Because I'd like to chat about him just a little bit.
Okay, here we go. It caught me by surprise because there's some common sense in here, but I don't think the rest of the participants in Wednesday night's debate are listening. So here it is.
Because I worry that we may very well be on the way to nominating somebody who cannot win in November. And if we choose a candidate who appeals to a small base like Senator Sanders, it will be a fatal error.
That's it.
Okay. So Michael Bloomberg, you know, as the mayor of New York, one of the things that he wanted to do was basically outlaw sugary drinks. You know, I don't think that that's any of Michael Bloomberg's business on what people decide what kind of drink that they want to have. But a couple of things. The guy, I think, is he's an elite. I think he's a snob. And he's also not a fair journalist. Journalism, there are some standards that you try to be, I want to say in some a true news story, you're going to be impartial. Certainly that there are op-eds, and we give our opinion all the time, but we do strive for the truth. And Michael Bloomberg has a news organization, and so there is some journalistic integrity to make sure from a news standpoint that you are reporting the news. But Steve, you and I were talking, if you own a business, you actually, in a free market, can decide what you do and do not do. But there's also the kind of the journalistic integrity, if that makes any sense. So back in December 6th of 2019, this was from CNN Business, Michael Bloomberg had told his reporters that they could not probe Democrat presidential candidates. And many of these news reporters were frustrated about that. And Michael Bloomberg said, with your paycheck comes some restrictions. And certainly it's within his purveyance to do that. But then what you have to ask is, if he is shutting down a voice over here, how can you really trust him over on some other story? So from a journalistic standpoint, he's not someone that can be trusted. So then you look at it and you say, could he be trusted as president? Your comments, Steve.
Well, we discussed this a couple times during the week, and I think I mentioned something about his nanny state viewpoint on things like the sugary drinks and whatnot. All his competition between now and as the primaries go and people drop out, all they need to do is drag out those sound bites where he's preaching at somebody about their lifestyle and how he wants to control it. That should be a pretty good turnoff.
I think so, too. The other thing that's really interesting, though, and this just came out yesterday from Newsweek, it says that his presidential campaign, this is Michael Bloomberg's presidential campaign, will reportedly pay hundreds of people $2,500 a month to promote the candidate via text message and on their personal social media feeds. The billionaire's team is hiring more than 500 deputy digital organizers to work up to 30 hours a week and promote his talking points to online friends and phone contact lists, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing a staffer in California and in internal documents. It says the outreach is limited to California, which holds its presidential primary on March 3rd, but could expand nationwide. So you talk about somebody trying to buy an election. I find that most interesting.
Well, I reached for the calculator real quick. You said 500 individuals were hired at $2,500 a month?
Yes.
That's 1,250,000 a month. So, yeah, we'll do that for, what, 4 or 5 months? We'll do it all day long because we got the money.
Because he's got the money.
I have heard another commentary earlier this week that talked about that his ability to spend money is creating a new dynamic, which I don't think we have seen on either side, you know, from either party, to be able to do these things. I just don't know if that's going to stand.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. So clearly he's going to try to buy the election, and he certainly wants to control every aspect of our lives. And that is totally antithetical to the American idea. Two other things I wanted to hit quickly. John Bolton, this was in The Federalist, he admits that his last-minute impeachment leak was a publicity stunt. And he said that, former National Security Advisor John Bolton admitted Wednesday that his testimony in President Donald Trump's recent impeachment proceedings involving Ukraine would have had no impact on the trial's outcome, even after sections of his upcoming book leaked, attempting to convict the president in its final days. People can argue about what I should have said and what I should have done, Bolton said at Vanderbilt University Wednesday night during a forum with his predecessor, Susan Rice, according to ABC News. But I'll bet you a dollar right here and now my testimony would have made no difference to the ultimate outcome. You know, Steve, I was so disappointed in John Bolton. I've had respect for him, and I am so disappointed in what he did. And then here we are just, you know, a few weeks later saying it was a publicity stunt. I'm really disappointed in him.
Well, if you want to sell books, I guess that's one of the ways we certainly have seen that before. But where'd you get that story?
That's from The Federalist.
Okay. It's certainly not going to be seen in the mainstream media, will it?
No. No, it will not. And then one other thing, this is from Fox News. USC is announced that it will be waiving all tuition fees for any student who comes from a family that makes less than $80,000. So starting with students entering this first year this fall, not only will students from households with an annual income below $80,000 be able to attend tuition-free, but also owning a home will not be counted when determining a student's financial need. A year's tuition runs at $57,000, after factoring in dining, housing, books, and transportation, it can cost around $77,000, according to the school. I wonder who's going to pay for that, Steve. And the other thing is this: we continue to see policies that squeeze the middle class. Two people working, you know, it can be pretty easy to get to $80,000. And $80,000 in California doesn't go very far. But yet people that are working to try to get ahead and making more than $80,000, but they're not uber rich, you know, their kids will not be able to go to probably USC because of that. I mean, do you see how they continue to squeeze the middle class? And I bet you dimes to donuts that somebody that, you know, is close to making $80,000, you'll see this, there becomes a cliff. They're like, I don't want that raise, because if they get that raise, then they might lose $77,000 a year that their kids could go to USC. I find it absolutely astounding. Instead of getting a scholarship and going to college and earning it, they're just giving it away because you make less than a certain amount of money. But let's go to Jason McBride. What's your thoughts about that, Jason McBride, with Presidential Wealth Management?
I'm going to quit my job so I can go to college for free.
At USC, huh? Yeah.
I'm just ready to be a student. You know, I want to grow my hair out a little, you know, hang out at some parties with girls and, you know, maybe I'll learn something. But the degree's just given out too, isn't it?
I think so.
You don't have to earn it, right? I'll just get a free degree and then someone else can pay for it. And then you know what I'm going to do with that degree?
What are you going to do?
I'll move in with my mom.
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of that's been happening. And
yeah.
A lot of those people are supporting Bernie, which the Democrat Party is, they're wringing their hands. In a way, they've created this monster of Bernie. And I don't think that they can quite figure out how to put it back in the box.
Well, they can't. And Bloomberg, what an interesting character. I mean, he's one of the only candidates I've ever seen that's running against his own record in many ways.
He did do
some things that were actually successful, and now he's running against what he did that worked.
Well, the one thing, though, is he seems to be pushing a little bit back on just total socialism. Although, you know, at least with Bernie, he's totally honest about what he wants to do. The other group, they certainly, I think, want to get us to the point of socialism as well, but they just want to be a little more sneaky about it and take a little bit longer. But Jason, socialism does not work out. You know, capitalism, people being able to work and to invest and be able to create wealth. And for the middle class, that's so unique with the American idea. That's what you specialize in, is helping individuals thrive and prosper and flourish as individuals.
Well, yeah, you bet. We don't have socialism going on at presidential. If one customer's account does a little better than another's, I don't take money out of that one and add it to everyone else's.
I'm glad to hear that. So, hey, we're headed into the weekend, but very quickly, just wanted to make sure that people know that you've put together this early year indicator guide, and that people can get that if they go to airpresidential.com.
They can. And one of the fun ones in there, Kim, is talking about the Super Bowl indicator that goes back to a long ways and says, well, is the market better when the AFC or the NFC wins the Super Bowl? I think that one's kind of fun to look at, but it actually has some credence as well as far as the numbers go. So you can get learn about that and four other interesting indicators. Go to airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Or give us a call at 303-694-1600 to get your free copy.
Sounds great, Jason. We will talk to you on Monday. You have a great weekend.
You too. Bye, Kim.
Okay. We'll be right back with Stan Everett.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I love hearing from you. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Stan Everett. He is a businessman and has a great love for the American idea. And he's done something very creative. Welcome to the show, Stan.
Well, thank you, Kim.
It's great to have you on. You have started something called the Legacy Project. Basically, you know, engaging in the battle of ideas, changing hearts and minds. Explain the Legacy Project to our listeners, please, Stan.
Sure. Well, it's a six-month program. We meet once a month. It's just a regional thing in the Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor, Greeley area. And we have community leaders, whether it's in ministry or in business, education, all sorts of different aspects, a lot of law enforcement. We've even had some foreign residents that are working here for some of the tech companies, and they'll go through the program. And what we do is we use American history as a baseline to say, okay, we live in a legacy that is America today, and the legacy kind of started at the 1776 Declaration of Independence and then the Revolutionary War. Let's use that as an example of a legacy, and let's examine the process that we went through in the founding era. What were the impacts and the influences of that? And we kind of use that process and those ideas that came about as principles in order to then encourage these participants to look at their lives and what are the legacy you're living and leaving, and how could you do that based on principles as opposed to just randomly going through life. And it seems to be a very effective way to bring people to recognize that they are leaving a legacy with everything that they do and with everyone that they talk to. And I think it becomes kind of an aha moment for a lot of the folks that go through it, where they start to think of themselves as role models as well as participants in the society, that they can do something that's good and lasting, and it means something to them as well as their descendants and their associates.
So how long has the Legacy Project been going on?
We're in our eighth year. I think we're crowding 500 participants.
Wow.
And so we don't have a website. We're not really an organization as you would understand it. There's no... we're really under the radar. All of our recruits come from past participants. And so we just keep growing every year. This year we have 68 people in it. That's pretty typical of what we have. Each of the participants join a small group with a single leader of five or six people, and they meet at an office in a conference room for a breakfast or lunch, and they go through these lessons that we have on, we start with the Declaration of Independence, we look at the American form of government, our economic system, and our culture, and we kind of examine how these systems for the Constitution and a free market economy are founded on the principles that are clearly articulated in the Declaration of Independence. And that kind of brings people to a much greater understanding and recognition of the exceptional nature of our country, as well as gives them an idea of how legacies can be built on principles.
Well, I find this fascinating. 500 people. You know, it just takes a remnant to start to make a change. And so this is very impressive. How did you come up with the Legacy Project, Stan Everett?
Well, a friend of mine that's probably we've been friends for 30 years, I call ourselves periodic friends. We would meet at a Chamber of Commerce meeting or a basketball game or wherever, just randomly. And periodically, we would say, hey, let's go out to coffee and talk about everything, our business world. We were in our late 30s, early 40s. Our business was starting to really grow and blossom. He's an attorney. I'm a real estate developer. And so we'd go and have coffee for 2 or 3 hours, literally sitting around and griping and grumbling and pointing out all the deficiencies of, you know, church and school and politics and whatever we could figure. We'd have a negative take on it, and then we would pat ourselves on the back for how smart we were, because if everyone just listened to us, everything would have been all right. Yep. And I think you can still see people like that at IHOP on a Wednesday afternoon drinking bottomless cups of coffee while they're sitting around the table griping.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of did this for 20-some years. Finally, one of these days, I was in just about 60-something. He was in his late 50s. We did this drill at a coffee shop of our favorite place and finished up after, you know, a couple of hours of griping, negativity, walked out onto the sidewalk, stopped talking, which was really an unusual thing for both of us, looked each other in the eye and said, so when are we going to stop griping and actually do something about this?
Wow.
Kind of a turning point for both of us. And it inspired us to actually do something. I created the program, drafted the curriculum for the history, put together a batch of videos that we use for our lessons. And then he and another fellow kind of filled in some of the gaps with not just a learning component, but we also do mentoring. And we also do what we call application, where we challenge each of these participants every month to come to the group with a story of something that they had done anonymously that was generous and kind. And then we ask them to watch what happens when that happens. And they come back with incredible stories of these little small things, whether it's buying somebody a breakfast or giving the kid that's working his tail off a tip at the Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Just little acts of kindness. And they are there looking at how this all works and who gets impacted. It's the pebble in the pond effect. And it really starts to encourage the participants to make these things a habit in their lives that turns into a lifestyle of generosity.
You know, it's interesting. One time I was down in North Cherry Creek. It was Christmas time, and I was putting money in my meter. And two women drove up and parked behind me. And I don't know what possessed me, but I just went over and put all the money in the meter for them as well, you know, and waved at them. And when I came back, I had the nicest note on my car. And in fact, I've saved that. And I don't know what possessed me, but it was just a really sweet moment, Stan Everett.
Well, you're a sweet lady, and that's what possessed you, I guess.
Well, not everybody thinks I'm sweet, because I am a fierce protector of the American idea. And that was kind of the next thing I wanted to ask you about is we are in such a divided time in our country now. And in fact, a dear friend of mine of over 30 years, we've kind of had a real honest conversation. She said, Kim, I don't want to talk about politics because it's so divisive. And we've had a small group, and I thought about it, and I thought, oh my gosh, we are asking that we don't have conversations about things that really matter, that in essence that I'm being asked to censor my speech and my thoughts when I'm around a group of people to quote unquote, you know, kind of keep the peace, if you will, or not be mm-hmm. divided. And I actually had asked you about this, and this conversation is going to be coming soon. We've decided we're going to sit down and have a conversation about it. And I think I'm looking to you, Stan, for some guidance on this. I am not alone. This is happening across America. And so how would you respond to this? Because I think that you've really made inroads in this stuff that's dividing us in America.
Well, we have a lot of people in our groups that are not aligned with the ideology of conservatism. We've had people that, some young guys, in fact, that were the campus directors of both Obama campaigns, very deeply entrenched in the political process of going into the campuses and talking to their peers, because they were young people, and encouraging them to vote for the Obama candidacy. And so that's kind of a challenge. You'd probably look at it as a challenge as well. How do I communicate with a young fella that has this background of, you know, in the trenches, hardcore political approach that would be different than mine? And what I did with him is sit down and say, how can we talk to one another? Because he's going through the program and resisting a lot of what we're talking about. And I don't want him to feel like, you know, you're a target here, but some of the other fellows at the table have a completely different viewpoint. Help me understand, Paul, how we can communicate with one another so that we can then make sure that the leader in your group understands this and tries to use these same techniques. And so we've kind of formulated this, well, let's keep on the principles, not get into the particulars of the politics, the people, as well as the personalities. And fell right into what I was dealing with in the Legacy Project with, well, the principles are articulated in the Declaration of Independence. The truths, all true, we hold these truths. It's this list of five truths. And if we continue to talk about those principles and not get distracted with the issues or the people of the day, then we can actually find out how much we agree with one another as opposed to how much we disagree with one another. And you kind of trail that into a really wonderful relationship that gives you the ability to have a conversation about these divisive and problematic issues that's constructive. And we're both looking for solutions because we both identify a problem and we agree with the problem as being identified. So it's hard to find somebody to do that with. It sounds like the person that you're dealing with may be a great candidate for you to partner with in order to have a great conversation that's going to conclude with some great relationship building, as well as maybe you can even come up with some solutions to these issues.
Well, I'm excited about that. And I really value my friend for reaching out and having this honest conversation about this and agreeing to talk about this. Stan Everett, let's go to break. When we come back, I want to continue this conversation. I am talking with Stan Everett. He's a successful businessman, as well as he started the Legacy Project up in Northern Colorado. And something that's really stuck with me is he said, let's talk about principles instead of the people and the personalities. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, I have some more questions with for Stan on this whole idea about principles. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. We'll keep you apprised of all the upcoming guests. We've got these amazing op-eds as well that we are publishing from our writer's circle. On the line with me is Stan Everett. He is a successful businessman, lives up in Northern Colorado, and for 20 years with his friend, they would get together and have coffee and complain and gripe. And then one day they said, we're not going to do that anymore. And out of that, the Legacy Project was born. And it is helping, it's helped over 500 people start to be able to communicate better about principles instead of the divisiveness of people and personality. So Stan Everett, I'm so grateful for this conversation. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Love to be here. Let me start with a story. We use this in the Legacy Project as kind of a closing to one of our topics on the economy, in fact. It's called the Three Golfers. So there's three golfers that have been together and they're just friends and they've played golf Thursdays for years, decades, in fact. One of them's a minister. One of them is a political consultant. The other one is a businessman, successful businessman. And they're out playing their typical Thursday round of golf, get to hole five. And here's two people playing golf with each have a caddy. And they're just going dead slow. I mean, it's just, you know, frustrating and aggravating because the guys are wanting to get back to their deal. And they finally walk up to the caddies and say, hey, we got to play through. These guys are just too slow. Let us play through. The caddies kind of look with a frown on their face and say, you must not understand who these people are. No, we don't care. We want to play through. The caddies interrupt and say, well, these are the two firemen that saved the 60 children from the fire at the daycare center 6 months ago. In the process, they went blind. But they loved golf, and this is their first time to come out here and play golf again. And so they're just having to be guided with every step that they take and every hole that they're on. So it's taking a long time. The minister's reaction is, oh, God, forgive me. I shouldn't be so cruel. The political consultant's reaction is, what district do these guys live in? They might be somebody I could get onto my campaign. The businessman, slow, he kind of is scratching his chin and he's kind of thinking about it. He says, it would have been more efficient if they'd played at night. I mean, just a cruel business, you know, efficiency type of a comment. What we do when we communicate with others is we always fall back to what we're used to in our world. And I think rather than think about the efficiency and the frustration and the, you know, what's happening to me, we need to put ourselves on the other side. The businessman should have helped these people, these firemen, play the rest of the game. And the reward for him would have been immensely greater than just trying to look at this from a business and perspective, from efficiency. What this does is, the moral of the story is, how do we communicate with people in a way that's going to effectively help us understand what they're doing as well as help them understand that we're here to help? And it becomes an important part of what we do at the Legacy Project, is how do we train each other to have an effective communication about divisive issues that doesn't turn into arguments, but actually turns into great relationships, and we become solution-oriented because we pull everything back to what do we believe and what do we agree upon from a principle standpoint, as opposed to what are we going to argue about that's just going to be out there today.
That is a fascinating story, and I want to go back to, you mentioned that there was a couple of guys, young guys, that were working probably up at CSU and the different campuses around there, encouraging the get out the vote for Obama. Sometimes I see kind of the principles are, how can I say, we say on the show many times, it's never compassionate to take other people's stuff, their rights, you know, all those things via force, whether it's with policy or weapons or unpredictable and excessive taxation. Mm-hmm. And I see from a political standpoint that I think that there is kind of the taking of people's stuff through policy and excessive taxation. So how can I come to terms with somebody that may think that that's a good idea? And I think that's one of the big questions out there in America right now, Stan. How would you answer that?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the program, and with the young fellow that I was talking about earlier, going through the Declaration of Independence, the truths, okay, all men are created equal, they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable or inherited rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what you're talking about specifically is the pursuit of happiness. Originally, that idea was the pursuit of property, which came from the Enlightenment language of John Locke and Adam Smith and others. But it was the property issue became an issue relative to the abolition or the acceptance of slavery. So they had to change the word at the drafting of the Declaration from property to happiness. But it's an economic term. So my right from my creator to pursue, not to be given, but to pursue property or happiness is a principled right. And then the next phrase literally is, and governments are instituted among men to secure the rights of the people. So my rights are intended to be secured by the government. Here's another principle of what the government is intended to be as it relates to my rights that came from a higher source. So that conversation with this fellow would be really understood, and then he would say, well, then government really isn't supposed to be an equalizer. It's not supposed to be a providing force where it takes from somebody and gives to somebody else. It's supposed to be a protecting force where my rights to my pursuit of happiness are secured by the government. So those are principal conversations that it's very hard to disagree with those principles as being articulated by the Declaration and then described and defined in the group. So his whole worldview changes in a matter of a few hours of conversation, but it doesn't necessarily change his actions or his behavior until years later, mm-hmm. when he's recognizing that, you know, the government is really overstepping its bounds as it was intended to be. So those are the kinds of principled arguments that we would make, where we create a definition, we identify it as principled, and then we go back in to an agreement as to that's how the government should be set up. Now, maybe that's right or maybe that's wrong, but if it's wrong, then we need to change it, but there's a process to do so through the Constitution. But I think it shakes people up pretty dramatically when they really start to look at the principles that are foundation of our government.
Well, and I think the seeds that you are planting, sometimes they are very long-term. It may not be an immediate change in opinion, but seeds are planted and honest, respectful communication occurs. And my gosh, that's a step in the right direction, it seems like to me, Stan Everett.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we've become great friends, different ages. He's got a whole different friend set of, you know, people that aren't trying to take advantage of him in order to get their political wishes fulfilled. Now he has friends that are true friends, and they can have these conversations, and they can agree and they can disagree. But his life was changed by going through the program, and then not only that, but me reaching out to him in a partnership form and saying, let's figure out how we can talk about this stuff because we love each other. Let's work towards how we can become not only friends, but have a great relationship between generations. And it's been very effective. And he's just one example of many, many of the same thing that have happened with not only me as a leader, but the other people that are participants in the program.
This is really, really exciting. We're just about out of time. Stan Everett, founder of the mm-hmm. Legacy Project. What would be the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Don't get locked into your habits, particularly of sitting around griping and blaming somebody else, the amorphous they, and try to reach out to somebody and build these partnerships and these relationships to improve your communications so that you can understand them and they can understand you and you can figure out what you agree on and then start the conversation.
Well, I really find such great hope in what you are doing. And if each of us go out and spread a little kindness, a little generosity, good manners, respect for others, and then, you know, really heartfelt working together to agree to have a partnership to learn to communicate, what great nuggets of wisdom this is. Stan Everett, thank you so much for joining the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day. And our quote for today is from John Locke. He says, the only defense against the world is a thorough knowledge of it. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want